But we begin this hour in Iraq and Syria with a look at just how far the self-proclaimed Islamic State has expanded its reach. ISIS militants now control the Syrian city of Palmyra. That's an ancient city and also a strategic one. It sits right near important gas fields. It's the first time the militant group has seized an entire city from Syrian government forces, and ISIS now controls more than half of that country, though a lot of that is uninhabited desert. But 5 days before, ISIS seized a much larger and important city in Iraq. That's Ramadi, the capital of Anbar province. Many, many lives of Americans and Iraqis were lost taking Ramadi from insurgents in the Iraq War. And now it's slipped from the Iraqi government once again. In an interview with The Atlantic this week, President Obama says he doesn't think the United States and its coalition is losing the war against ISIS. But he told The Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg, quote, "There's no doubt there was a tactical setback." Meanwhile, retired four-star Army General Jack Keane, who served as vice chief of staff of the Army, has a very different assessment. He had it yesterday when he testified in front of the Senate Armed Services Committee.
The resources provided to support Iraq are far from adequate. The timing and urgency to provide arms, equipment, and training is insufficient. And as such, we are not only failing, we are in fact losing this war. Moreover, I can say with certainty that this strategy will not defeat ISIS.
So for a look at the Islamic State's expansion in Iraq and Syria and what it all means for our foreign policy agenda, we want to turn now to Ali Kaderi. He's chairman and chief executive of Dragoman Partners, and he served as special assistant to five American ambassadors in Iraq and as a senior advisor to three heads of central command from 2003 to 2010. Ali Kaderi, one assessment from the White House that we heard there says the strategy is sound and that Ramadi is a mere setback. And another, voiced by Jack Keane, says that ISIS will never be defeated without coalition troops on the ground, and that Iraq, with the United States and other countries behind it, is losing to ISIS. So what's your assessment?
I completely agree with General Keane. The reality is that the United States clearly does not have a strategy in Iraq, nor in Syria, nor for Iran, nor for the entire Middle East. Since we don't have a comprehensive strategy, we're not properly resourcing it. We don't have the right people assigned to the mission. And as a result, our strategic enemies, whether Iran supporting radical militant Shia or Al-Qaeda and ISIS, radical militant Sunnis, they are both getting stronger as us and our allies get weaker.
Why isn't the stated White House strategy, which is advisors on the ground, limited airstrikes, the occasional special operations move in Syria or Iraq to take out ISIS leaders, and support for the Iraqi army, why isn't that a strategy?
Well, first, let's go back to the issue of the assumptions. You recall for years now, since President Obama took office, he said Iraq was, quote, sovereign, independent, that it had a good government in Baghdad, so on and so forth. In reality, of course, none of that was the case. And so eventually things melted down, as was the case in Mosul last summer, and then yet again in Ramadi this week. So the assumptions are fundamentally flawed. But the issue is all of these military resources are just good resources that are being thrown after bad, because the problems in Iraq go back to the issue of governance. Because you have a government that is seen as illegitimate by millions of Iraqis, this problem is fundamentally political. It is not military. So all the entire United States Army could go into Iraq today, and like happened for most of the past decade, it would be bogged down in a quagmire. Until the president recognizes that this is a political problem that needs political reconciliation in Baghdad, that needs less Iranian malign involvement in Baghdad, and less of a proxy war throughout the region, until that recognition is in place, we will continue to face face major strategic setbacks as occurred in Mosul and in Ramadi, and we will have many more, I assure you.
I think that a lot of Americans who've been paying attention to this, certainly a lot of lawmakers on Capitol Hill and people in Washington, thought that the politically legitimate ouster of Nouri al-Maliki from the top of the Baghdad government, if you will, was a move to exactly what you're talking about, a more legitimate government within Iraq that would have more respect of regular Iraqi citizens and marginalize the type of ideology and legitimacy that ISIS was bringing to a lot of Sunnis. But that apparently hasn't happened.
The removal of Prime Minister Maliki last summer was a major success. However, we have to recognize that after 8 years in power, Maliki essentially destroyed the Iraqi national identity through his misrule, following 3 decades of Saddam Hussein's own misrule and genocide and corruption and murder. At this point, after the White House backed Maliki for 4 years under Obama, despite many of us urging the president not to do so, essentially the cancer has already spread, it's metastasized, and the president is trying to basically pop a few Tylenols to defeat brain cancer. But the cancer has already spread, and although Maliki has been removed, most of the government in Baghdad is sort of too far gone and clearly has not demonstrated the will to treat all Iraqis as first-class citizens. And so again, that's why 90% of our resources and our time and our energy needs to be spent on focusing on reforming the Iraqi government to the extent it's possible. And the other 10 or 20% needs to be focused on the military's resources as enablers, as supporters. Right now, it's the opposite, which is why we continue to fail. Again, the vast majority of the Iraqi army, which is Shia, clearly doesn't see their government as worth fighting for, worth dying for. And that should be deeply troubling. And that should force lawmakers to think, why would we ever send American troops into Iraq when the Iraqi army itself is not willing to fight for its own country?
But at the same time, you agree with General Jack Keane, who we played at the top, in addition to the major political reforms that you're talking about. Look, he's a military man. He also says the reality is that ISIS will never go away unless the United States recognizes that reality and mobilizes a division on the ground in Iraq. That's not going to happen while President Obama's here. We know that. But he's saying that will happen in the future or ISIS will stay around.
I believe that so long as the current regime exists in Baghdad, so long as the current regime exists in Damascus, and so long as thus the injustice, the lack of dignity continues, that ISIS will exist. And you can, again, send the entire American military into those countries, and all we will be doing is being dragged down into another quagmire. The absolute 80% emphasis of the United States government and our allies should be on the politics. And then, yes, we can send in special operations forces, trainers, to enable them after to take advantage of the political successes. But we absolutely should not send in a division or even, you know, a single American combat troop until the government in Baghdad and in Damascus has a new way of doing business, which is treating all of its citizens as first-class citizens. Because ISIS is a symptom of the underlying cancer, which is poor governance.
While battles rage in places like Palmyra and Ramadi across Syria and Iraq, Ali Kaderi says it's not about military confrontation in the end. It's about good politics. Ali Kaderi, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Ali Kaderi is chairman and chief executive of Dragman Partners. He served as a special assistant to 5 American ambassadors and 3 heads of the Central Command from 2003 to 2010.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.